Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Here's a sampling of the response President Trump received last week when he tweeted attacks against MSNBC host Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, saying that Psycho Joe and low IQ crazy Mika had insisted on meeting him at his Mar-a-Lago resort while Mika was, quote, bleeding badly from a facelift.
Tweets like this are inconsistent with the greatness of the country and the office.
The president's tweet was completely inappropriate.
This is the president of the United States. You don't do things like that.
Look, what we're trying to do around here is improve the tone and the civility of the debate, and this obviously doesn't help do that.
That really saddens me because it is so beneath the dignity of the President of the United States.
That was House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker Paul Ryan, and Senators Dianne Feinstein, Susan Collins, and Lindsey Graham, two Democrats, three Republicans. President Trump says his tweets are modern-day presidential. Well, what does history tell us about that? Ed Ayers and Joanne Freeman are historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
Well, people have been using this phrase, beneath the dignity of the office, which implies that there's some sort of agreed-upon standard by which we judge presidential behavior. Joanne, did that idea start all the way back at the beginning with George Washington?
Well, sort of. I mean, poor George, right? Being the first president, there kind of wasn't a standard, right? So there were kings, which he was not supposed to act like, but it wasn't clear what else he was supposed to do. So he actually did something that probably most other presidents didn't do, and that is he tried very hard not to allow his persona to shape that office. Mm. So he was kind of renowned. As a matter of fact, he prided himself on the fact that supposedly no one ever knew what he was feeling. There's an anecdote about when he was stepping down and someone met him and said, "My, General Washington, you look as though you're really relieved to be stepping down." And he bristled and he said, "That can't be the case. Nobody ever knows what I'm thinking." Huh. So he was kind of the invisible president as far as his personality goes.
He played it safe then. Ed, is there a time a few years down the line when presidents start to push the boundaries of what is considered presidential or normal?
Well, we're still back in Joanne's period where I believe Thomas Jefferson just gave a real kind of subtle insult to British visitors, if I'm not mistaken, right, Joanne?
You are correct. That actually, yes. But Jefferson is an interesting case because he's definitely not George Washington. So Jefferson gets elected as this guy who's going to shake up the system, a new kind of president, the man of the people, not like the establishment that came before. So the thing that he did that upset some people and seemed embarrassing, which was wearing slippers to meet dignified people in the White House. And not even just slippers, but like, yes, run down slippers, according to the newspapers.
I hope our listeners weren't driving when they heard that news.
<I know. laughs> Veering off the road now as they hear that horrifying detail. So people who politically disagreed with him were shocked at this. And of course, the people who elected him to be the guy to shake things up had no issue with that at all. It was just part of why they'd put him into office.
Wow. I guess that would be newsworthy today, actually, as well. look, Ed, I know that you have something to say about President Johnson, who did a swing around the circle speaking tour in 1866, which I understand also pushed a lot of boundaries of what people considered polite at the time as well.
And in many ways, boundaries that would still be there today. This is Andrew Johnson we're talking about. So this is after the Civil War. Andrew Johnson is trying to lead the country through Reconstruction, as he thinks President Lincoln would. But these radicals in his own party are constantly pushing him. So he says, "Here's what I'm going to do. I'm a great stump speaker. As recently as 1863, I was out doing another swing around the circle, and I could persuade people to come into our fold. So I'm going to do it again." And his advisors say, "Please, sir, don't do that. Please don't, as President of the United States, go out and speak in front of raucous crowds." And he says, no, I got this. I can do it." But there's a few ingredients that make this something different than it had been in 1863. First of all, this was the first train-based speaking tour. So he's going pretty rapidly from one place to the next.
High-tech.
Yeah, exactly. But there's something even higher tech, Joanne. The telegraph is, as they say, telegraphing the speech he gave the night before to the people he's getting ready to give it to that night. And at the very beginning, he said, look, I've got General Grant with me. I've got General Custer with me. Look, we're representing the best of the country. And it went pretty well at first. But then people started noticing that he was just saying the same thing over and over again. And people started showing up with signs and quoting him before he'd actually said it. I hope everybody's cringing at their
just. I was going to say, it makes me feel so bad for him.
It's embarrassing, but you know what? This is a complicated time in our history. This is right after the Civil War. Tensions are high. Things are messy. Can he be forgiven for that?
That's a very generous approach, Peter. I think that's a good point. And that was his philosophy. He said, no one has suffered more for the Union than I have. I'm not unlike Jesus Christ, in fact, which you can imagine did not go down. And he said, you know, and like Jesus, I'm all about pardoning people, in this case, the former rebels. And the Republicans, they just killed our sons. You shouldn't be pardoning them. So you can imagine you're his handlers, and you're out there with all these hecklers, showing no regard for the dignity of the presidency at all. And he's walking off stage one time, and one advisor says, sir, you must remember the dignity of the office. And he says, I don't care about dignity. And unfortunately, a reporter heard that. And this is an off-year election. He's trying to win support for people who would support him. And in fact, one estimate is that he may have lost as much as 1 million votes his side. And I don't want to ruin the story for people who haven't read up on Reconstruction history lately, but he is then impeached by the same majority that he actually helps put into office by his vituperative speaking.
Right. Well, Joanne, let's move on to more contemporary presidents who've been accused of behavior that's unworthy of the presidency. Of course, Richard Nixon in Watergate, Bill Clinton, his sex scandal with Monica Lewinsky. Are these cases instructive for our purposes?
Well, I mean, I suppose in some ways, you know, any kind of incident like that, yes, is instructive. Why? Because they are not the only two presidents who did things that people didn't like. But in their particular case, they crossed particular lines that got people upset and led to impeachment. So that's an interesting kind of question to ask.
But I know there are people listening to this who will say that President Trump has not done anything to cross the line. In fact, his supporters are happy that he's redefining what it means to be presidential. And that is the very allure of Donald Trump and why he got elected to the office. Was it that way throughout history when these presidents were doing these sorts of things? Did their supporters come to his defense?
Well, we need to remember that it took a very long time for Watergate to bring Richard Nixon to resignation, almost 20 months. And at every step along the way, he counted on the silent majority to be there for him. And they were until the bitter end. And you see with Clinton, the polls showed that many of his supporters did not fade away, even as these embarrassing scandals kept appearing in the news.
The other thing is, to be embarrassing or to do something embarrassing, to say something embarrassing, it's part of the human condition. Don't we want our presidents to be human?
You know, you think back about things that were not scandalous, but that seemed embarrassing at the time. Gerald Ford bumping his head on the airplane. Jimmy Carter fighting off the rabbit with the paddle on the boat. You know, you look at both those things, that could happen. Well, maybe not the rabbit thing, but Gerald, that could happen to any of us at any time. And how people would dwell on that. So I think you're right, Peter, that we kind of want our presidents to do things that say, oh, yeah, okay, they're just one of us.
Mm. But I think also along those lines, we also want our presidents to seem as though they're doing things on purpose to shape a message or promote an agenda or be a particular kind of a leader. And I think that makes bumping your head or doing these other things that are human, that in a way that makes them more okay because you can tell that they're not part of the main message or the main agenda.
So quickly, I want to ask both of you then, when President Trump says he's modern day presidential, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, I'm not sure that there's a big meaning there. I think that's a way of saying what I'm doing is presidential because I'm doing it.
Ed, what do you think?
Well, if we think about what has made him a modern president, it is his complete immersion in the electronic environment. He's a product of it from television in the first place, sort of lives to see what kind of mirrors reflected back to him, and seizing on this newer form of Twitter to master it himself.
Right.
I think that's what he means, is that he is a man for his time, which means that he's not going to shy away from any of the power that he might possess.
Ed Ayers and Joanne Freeman are historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Thanks to you both, as always.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.